I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Mike, you've heard of this conspiracy theory that humans are actually aliens, right?
Well, I once knew a guy with six toes on each foot, so maybe him, but the rest of us, probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But in the future, it looks like human beings could really become extraterrestrial beings. That is, some of us might start being conceived and born in space.
Now, our listeners might be wondering why people haven't started doing this already, since trips to space are increasing, both commercial trips and government missions, such as NASA's Artemis project.
But having babies in space is more complicated than you might think. And that's where Spaceborne United comes in. They're already working on solving the puzzle of human procreation in the cosmos.
And Lauren, you got me in touch with Dr. Egbert Edelbrock, CEO of a company in the Netherlands called Spaceborne United, so we could learn more about the project. I'm your host, Mike Rogers, and this is Something Offbeats. Tell me about Spaceborne United.
Yeah, so we are a space research company. We aim to enable human reproduction in space and meanwhile also improving IVF treatment on Earth. And we achieve this by doing three things. We research the conditions for the different stages of reproduction in space. And the second thing is we translate the outcomes into missions, space missions that enable these stages of reproduction. And that includes implementation partners that can bring us to space and back to Earth, etc. And the third thing we do is we translate those research outcomes into medical devices that enable the conception and embryo development in space. So we basically re-engineer existing IVF technology that is already being used every day in IVF clinics.
What's different about reproduction in space compared to reproduction here on Earth?
The key two reasons why reproduction in space is different is the radiation level is much more dangerous in space because you're not protected by the atmosphere, the especially the lowest 10 kilometer of the atmosphere is absorbing a lot of radiation. So that takes away a lot of the hazards. So if you're above that in space, you have much more dangerous radiation. So you have to address that.
Here on Earth, annual radiation exposure from cosmic radiation, it's equivalent to around 3 chest x-rays, is according to the CDC. In space, astronauts are exposed to radiation equivalent to about 150 up to 6,000 chest x-rays.
And the second big thing is the difference in gravity. Everybody thinks in space you're floating. Well, that could be if you are orbiting the Earth or the Moon or Mars. You're constantly falling, so you experience microgravity and you're floating. But if you're on Mars or on the Moon, you do experience some gravity. You're not floating anymore. But the gravity is different. On Mars, it's only about 39% of what people are used to on Earth. So that is different for the body. In microgravity, it's much more different. It's much more problematic. All the fluids in our body is used to be pulled to your feet, basically, because of the gravity. And if you're in microgravity floating around, the body fluids will more be in the middle of your body, causing, your body is not used to that. So that is also causing problems. Other biological processes are being disturbed by that.
Why the focus on reproduction in space? Why not just living in space in general?
But if we want to become a multiplanetary species, then we need to realize independent human settlements on other planets. And that would include learning how to reproduce on the other planets.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. What would you say is the most likely scenario that could lead to humans living in space?
Yeah, well, a lot of these, basically all space agencies like NASA and ESA, they are already preparing human settlements on the Moon and also on Mars for decades. So they're not just planning, they're fully in preparation. Also some commercial organizations, of course, like SpaceX, but also Richard Branson with Virgin Galactic, a few others. So it's already being prepared. But also, if you look at what drives humanity to expand our existence in space, our presence in space.
I'm more than a little freaked out about the idea of traveling to space myself. Definitely not trying to get a ticket for one of those commercial missions. I do love Star Wars, though, and I can't help but be intrigued with the idea of a multi-planetary species and maybe going to work in a starfighter one day. How about you?
Not unless they can do something about the flight times. I flew to New Zealand earlier this year. That was 15 hours, and it nearly killed me. So I can't imagine a flight to Mars or even the moon.
Yeah, and imagine the jet lag. I also have to ask, do you remember the moon landing? And if you do, did you imagine we would be talking about setting up shop there in your lifetime?
It's an interesting question. If you think back to JFK in the early 60s, when he first announced the goal of landing on the moon, did anyone at that time really think that would happen? Probably not, but it did. So, sure, if we can fly there, why can't we do it again and bring along some building supplies?
Even growing up in the 90s, though, I only imagined astronauts going to space. Outside this Disney Channel movie, Xenon, which was about a community that lived on a space station. Did your daughters ever watch those movies, the Xenon movies? I still have a song from one of them stuck in my head.
No Xenon. That one is not familiar, but I am an expert on SpongeBob and Jimmy Neutron. To your point, though, it does seem like we're going to be scrolling past photo albums of our friends' trip to space any day now.
There are also these commercial motives next to the political motives. And I mean, there used to be a space race between just the US and the Russians, basically. And now the new space race includes all the other nations and Europe as a group, and Australia and Canada and Japan and China, of course, and some upcoming space nations in United Arab Emirates. So they all would like to claim something unique in space, like being able to say, hey, we enabled the first human baby conceived in space.
Space tourism actually began more than 20 years ago. In recent years, figures like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson kicked off a new space race and more investment into civilian space launches.
And all three of those men are billionaires, and the prices for a commercial space adventure does tend to limit that activity to others in their tax bracket.
But it's really only just starting.
There's space tourism starting to further develop. So there are space hotels being developed. The International Space Station is about to retire. So there are several new space stations being developed, also by China. And also the Artemis space program includes sending many astronauts to the moon, to the surface of the moon, but also orbiting the moon to prepare for missions to Mars and other missions. Nowadays, there's like a permanent presence in space with a maximum of maybe 6-7 people at a time, but that will continue to increase really rapidly. Very soon, it will be 10 times as many, and it keeps doubling every year, probably.
As far as humans setting up colonies in space, what to you is more likely? Would it be Mars? Would it be the moon? Or someplace else?
The moon is a logical first step because it's so much closer to Earth. The traveling time is only like 3 or 4 days, and Mars is and you can travel like every day in a week, every day in the year to the moon, basically if the weather is good enough. But traveling to Mars is only feasible once every 26 months. The orbits of Mars and Earth, they are different, so there's only 1 month every 26 months that it's close enough to actually make the traveling feasible. So that's a big extra challenge. And also the traveling time is not 3 days. It's more likely 7 months with the current technology. So the moon is a much easier first step.
But getting back to Spaceborne United's mission, what have you learned so far about what it might take for human reproduction to happen on, for example, a colony on the moon?
We have to distinguish natural reproduction and assisted reproduction. Baseborn is focusing on assisted reproductive technologies. So we're taking basically, well, having intercourse out of the equation for now. We want to enable, we're definitely working towards enabling natural reproduction eventually, but because that is causing a lot of medical problems for now, we first have to learn more about how we can prevent this. And we can do that by using assisted reproductive technologies. So similar to on Earth, you have assisted conception with IVF outside of the natural womb to create embryos, etc.
So IVF is easier and it makes more sense to start, but could we overcome these challenges and eventually get to a point where we reproduce the old-fashioned way in space?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of technologies helpful to protect against too much radiation. For us, it's hardly a problem, actually, because we have relatively short missions, because we are focusing on the first stage of reproduction, so the conception and the first 5 days of embryo development. And we selected a specific orbit around the Earth at a certain altitude. I can share that. It's 230 kilometers, where the radiation levels will stay well under the norms that the medical society, medical sector defined for developing embryos in space.
Would the pregnancies then take place in space or on another celestial body?
We need to learn a lot more about how much gravity is necessary for a healthy pregnancy period. It's very likely that microgravity will be out of the question. That's absolutely unhealthy. But we don't know if the Martian gravity environment could be sufficient. It is a big difference from the Earth gravity, but it just might be enough. The moon's gravity is only 1/6, only 16%. That's very likely to still be insufficient. So if you can create artificial gravity by a rotating big wheel on a space station, then you can address this gravity problem, or if you are on a planet where there's enough gravity. So it can be addressed.
I don't have kids, and my knowledge of pregnancy, like my knowledge of space, mostly comes from movies and TV. Those fake pregnancies usually include morning sickness, which seems like it would be awful on a planet with weaker gravity than ours. Little messy. You actually have kids, Mike. How do you think pregnancy in space would work?
I think it would definitely make it easier during the third trimester, or as I call it, the waddling phase, because you'd float right through it.
Well, that's a good point.
This is fascinating. I never realized that reproduction could be a problem in space.
Yeah, I was. I have a tendency to say it's not rocket science, but maybe it is. But it's the challenges seem we can overcome those challenges. We can address them. It just takes time to take a step-by-step approach and, yeah, take one stage of reproduction at a time. We have a very small, like a mini lab. Small shoebox size, 5-6 kilogram mini lab, that we take into space, and the cost to take these devices into space are dropping every year.
Is it possible that this research could affect reproduction here on Earth and lead to advances in that?
Well, it's we have very strong expectations about that. We have very specific expectations that it will, that doing IVF in space will result in research outcomes that can be translated into improving IVF treatment on Earth and improve the success rates specifically. So we're going to prove that because there's a big international trend that women want to focus more on their careers first before starting a family. So, but their biology is not really helpful. So they will be relying more and more on assisted reproductive technology or fertility treatments. So we're very happy that we're also contributing to this trend and empowering women to have careers in that way.
What is the next step then? What's next in your research?
You cannot just start doing experiments with human reproductive cells and human embryos. That there's good reasons, and all these ethical committees that follow your steps, and you have to convince them that you're doing it in a very sound, scientifically and ethically sound way. So we start with animal cells, animal reproductive cells, sperm cells and oocytes. And we prove that our technology is working. We prove that the mouse pups that result from these experiments, we have to prove that they are healthy, they are not affected in a negative way. And then we can transition towards working with human reproductive cells. And we expect we will be able to enable the very first human embryo conceived in space, in history, basically, in about 5 to 6 years.
Let me ask you this. In conducting this research and running this company, do you ever stop sometimes and think to yourself, I really could be changing the future?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're very lucky to have all conversations with people like you and other media researchers and other scientists, and we embrace all these dialogues. But we are many times, basically confronted with the responsibility that we seem to have, that we might be causing a small step in human evolution. The very first human baby conceived in space, that is a big thing. And for that reason, we are called Spaceborne United. We don't want this to be a rich people, white rich people, Western people thing. We want this to be as inclusive as possible and involve all the regions and races and religions as possible.
I get the feeling that if we ever do establish a space colony and it's in your lifetime, you're going to be right at the front of the line to get on that spacecraft.
I certainly hope so.
I'm Mike Rogers, and thanks for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode, written and produced by Lauren Barry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Bree Flores. Original music by Myron Kaplan, and editorial support from Cooper Mall. Now, to keep listening, subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And let us know about any offbeat stories that you've heard of that you think we should cover. Send them to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey. That's AudacyCY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.